my name is Rachel Dratch. And I feel overly excited about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
But wait, why overly excited? Why not appropriately excited?
Well,
don't you think?
Because I also feel a little nervous. When I'm doing these things, I get a little like heart racing a little bit. So I threw in the overly it different.
That's just the cocaine talking.
Exactly.
We can be honest
here. I know. You know me too well.
You are a known cokehead. If I sing it, it's not as offensive.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. We have a fantastic podcast for you today. I actually don't know if that's true. That's just a show business thing. You sort of come in with bravado and confidence. I do think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be quite good.
What do you mean you think? You did the interview already.
Okay. Well, that's nice to give away the magic that the interview's been done already. The interview is, I like the interview a lot.
Yeah.
I really do like the interview, but this part, you don't know what I'm going to talk about.
No.
So this could go right in the toilet.
This could.
And so for me to say fantastic or is this fabulous or an amazing episode is a falsehood.
Right.
Because I think the interview is wonderful, but I have no faith in what I'm about to say.
Okay.
I have given it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what we're going to talk about.
All right, cool.
You know, so yeah. This is just totally going to wing it and see what happens.
So What are we talking about?
Well, this occurred to me.
Oh, I don't like whatever's happening right now.
I have been experiencing, and I know people are fascinated in our culture with, I want to know behind the scenes, what's really going on with our biggest stars. What's it really like to be them? Well, let me open up a window for you and tell you. Because I think it's fair to say that I'm a big deal.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm up there with the, I'm the Timothée Chalamet of comedy, if you will.
Wow.
Well, I think that's fair.
He's so young and
so what's
new.
That about? I didn't say anything about my age or
I know. I feel really bad. The second young came out, I felt really bad
about it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying I think most people right now listening to the podcast are nodding. If you said to them, what's Conan? I think a lot of people would say he's the Timothée Chalamet of comedy.
But what is it that you guys have in common?
Just this, we're omnipresent, we're everywhere. You know, try and avoid Conan O'Brien in the culture and try and avoid Timothée Chalamet, not going to happen.
Right.
Anytime you turn up a volume dial, you're going to hear me. I'm everywhere.
Do you think that your podcast right now is like as talked about as the movie Dune?
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it's probably up there with, I bet I haven't checked to see if I'm trending and I don't encourage anyone to check. I think just please don't check.
Yeah.
But I bet Dune's trending, Chalamet's trending, and that Conan guy is trending.
Am I Zendaya?
No.
That's ridiculous.
Did I pronounce that right?
I hear she's hardly in the movie.
Yeah, she's in like 10 minutes.
I haven't seen it yet, but she's everywhere. And I thought, oh, this is the story of Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya.
Yeah.
You know, on a sand planet. And no, apparently, I think she enters briefly, looks at the camera, says, Zendaya present, and then walks out. Present and accounted for, I think is her full line.
I'd be happy to be here.
Anyway, I'm going to let you in on what it's like to be me, which is I've had a lot of mouth discomfort lately.
Oh, this is how you're Timothée Chalamet.
Huh.
He talks about his mouth discomfort all the time.
No, he doesn't.
No, of course he doesn't.
Oh, I'm going to say. That's sarcasm.
I just believe anything Sona ever tells me.
Yeah, that was so. Oh, I see. It's sarcasm. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
If he wants to stay relevant, he should let people in on what's going on with himself medically. Okay. I would tell Timothée Chalamet that he should tell people. By the way, little known fact, you remember this, Sona.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we did shows at Comic-Con, and a good friend of mine brought his nephew to our after party.
Yeah.
It was Timothée Chalamet about, I want to say, a year before he blew up.
Wow.
Or a year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Yeah, I think I know what you're saying.
And he hung out at our after party, and I have a picture of me with Timothée, and I'm like, yeah, he seems like a nice kid. I'll give him a little picture. He's going to treasure this his whole life.
Yeah.
This picture with Conan O'Brien. Get in here, kid. Here's something you can hang on to for the rest of your life. This is your biggest moment right now. Your picture with Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
Click. He's the biggest star in the universe.
Oscar nominee.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, you know, what am I over here? Chopped liver? Yes, I am. But anyway, that's not my point. My point is to get across that I knew Timothée Chalamet just before he blew up. And some would say I'm responsible. Others would say there's no connection.
Right.
And he owes me nothing.
Yes.
That's probably the more logical explanation.
What's happening with your health?
My health. I've had this, and I'm letting you in on a big star's pain and agony. I have had this discomfort in my mouth that really, I swear to God, was a bad tooth. So I went to the dentist. They took x-rays. Nothing wrong. Mm. A couple of weeks later, it's still really bothering me. I go back. More x-rays. They look. They go, no, nothing's wrong. And then one of them said, you know what? Your sinus cavity is very close to the tooth nerve. Have you had a cold lately? Yes, I have.
Mm. Mm.
So then I look up online, nasal swelling, tooth pain, and it comes back with
hot
the
Google search.
I know.
That's what people want to hear about? Conan's Google searches?
That's some sexy
Hey, you want to hear about my sexy Google search? Check this out. Nasal inflammation, mouth pain. MILF. I put MILF in at the end.
No. Yeah.
Yes, I did. And man, was I off to the races.
Oh.
Anyway, just if you're out there, it's a real thing. Well, and then it suggested take a decongestant and see what happens. I took a decongestant. Tooth pain went away completely.
Oh.
And so I'm going to get it checked out. I'm going to see an ENT. I'm going to get this sinus thing worked out.
Yeah.
But I just want you to know, well, I just let you in. I made myself vulnerable. And I think that's pretty brave of me.
Well, and if you're out there and you're suffering from a toothache and you're going to the dentist and they're saying there's nothing wrong, it could be a sinus thing.
Right.
You're saving lives.
Saving lives.
Okay. All right. I get it. The joke is on me.
Sexy Googling about sinus infections.
You know what? I would
do you just add MILF to every Google search?
I just add MILF to everything. I really do.
Oh.
Yeah, I do. Battle of Lexington Concord, 1775, MILF. And you will see very attractive women in their 40s, naked, fighting it out with the British.
Naked?
Yeah.
Oh.
Would you think a MILF search, they're wearing beekeeper's outfits? What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Well, you have to also put naked.
Oh, you have to.
So you add MILF naked.
Yeah, sometimes I forget the naked and I do just Lexington Concord battle 1775 naked. And it's a naked male recreation of that battle. And that's not, I have to say, it's just not fun.
It doesn't do it for you. It
doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
But let's review what we've learned in this incredible opening to the show that was completely unscripted. If you have mouth pain, it could be your sinus. Just check into that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if you want temporary relief, use a decongestant.
Got it.
Two, Timothée Chalamet, the biggest thing that may ever have happened to him is his picture with me,
right,
which I'm sure he treasures. I've seen some photographs of him because there's photographs of him everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and he's wearing a locket. I bet it's the photo of me and him in the locket.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that's
true. Do you think he remembers taking that picture with you?
I think no.
I'm quite certain
he has no memory of anything that happened to him. When he's got the kind of fame where everything that happened to you before that fame started is completely obliterated. It's like Men in Black. When you get that kind of fame, all memory prior to that is wiped clean.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I get that.
I know that I'm not that famous because I remember everything really well.
I was just going to ask if you remember anything from before you were 29.
No, a super very detailed, granular memories of fifth grade. And all the humiliations and struggles with acne, all still there in brilliant Technicolor. So yes,
wow.
I never quite made it. But I've talked to people like Tom Hanks and I've said, so, you know, before Splash, and he's like, nothing.
Wow.
No memory. And then Steve Martin, no memory. Betty White's real fame came later in life. She has no memory of anything that happened to her before she was 85.
So he won't remember having ice cream with me at Ghirardelli.
Who? Timothée?
Timothée Chalamet.
Imagine if he remembered Sona but didn't remember you.
Could we have him on the podcast?
Well, do you have his number? Are you close?
No, I don't have his number. I could probably get it. But no, I don't have his number. I'm sure. You know what? I'm going to say Sona. Sure. I'm going to be nice to you. Yes, I'm sure he remembers having ice cream with you.
Okay.
He probably remembers exactly what he ordered. Peppermint fudge ripple crunch.
You remember?
Chalamet. That's the sound of Tim that he made when he kisses someone. Chalamet.
It's in the air.
It's in the air. Chalamet. Nice. My guest today. My guest today is a hilarious actress and comedian who was a cast member on Saturday Night Live for 7 years, creating the iconic character Debbie Downer. Now she has a new film, which she co-wrote and stars in, A Clusterfunk Christmas. I'm very happy to talk to her again because we have some memories of sharing 30 Rock together, me at late night, she at SNL, and some of our misadventures. I'm thrilled she's with us today. Rachel Dratch, welcome. Rachel, I'm very happy to talk to you because you're hilariously funny.
Thank you.
And beloved, but also, in addition to that, you and I, we go back a ways. We have we got a few war stories, I think, that we could talk about.
And we do.
I don't know if you're thinking what I'm thinking, but I have very clear memory once, and I'll set it up.
I knew it was coming right out. I knew it was going to be first.
Is this where you sexually—
starts with a W.
Is this where you sexually harassed me on an elevator? Because that's what I was thinking about.
I blocked that part out.
Yeah, you were trashed.
No, mine starts with a W.
With a W.
Yeah.
Is it Wendy's?
Yes!
Yes!
Wendy's!
Yes! This is so exciting. Okay, let me roll this out for people and then— I'll start it, which is, I believe it was around Thanksgiving time. And this is back in the day. I'm the host of the late night show. And I'm on the 6th floor. You're at Saturday Night Live. You guys are taping that on the 8th floor. And in this famous studio 8H. And so we're always running into each other. And I think we ran into each other. And we're both from Massachusetts. I'm from Brookline, Mass. You're from, where are you from again?
Lexington.
Lexington.
Yeah.
That's right. Lexington. And I knew that about you. And we'll talk about that because I have a story about that too.
Okay.
But we bump into each other and we're talking about it's the holiday. We're both going to, I'm going to head up like on Wednesday for Thursday Thanksgiving or something like that, I think, something like this. And then we're chatting and you said, asked me how I was getting up there. And I said, I'm just going to drive. Is this right so far?
Yeah, except I thought I was actually a guest on your show. We were chatting in between the little thing.
Yeah.
But
okay.
In any case, yes.
Either way,
correct.
You know, I had no life outside
Nor
of the
did
show.
I.
Yeah, okay. It makes sense that it happened during the show because you were a guest and in the commercial break, so the band's playing. And you said, hey, Conan, you headed back to Massachusetts? And I said, yeah. And you said, how are you going? And I said, I'm going to drive. And I think you said, you were mentioned that you had to go up too.
Yeah.
And I think either you asked or I offered, why don't we drive together?
Exactly. And there we were.
Cut to us.
Cut to us in your car, pulling over in Connecticut.
We're driving along.
Walking into a Wendy's somewhere in Connecticut.
So we're driving along and I'm hungry and you're hungry. And I see the Wendy's girl who always looks like me.
You have an affinity.
Yeah, I have an affinity for the Wendy's girl because that's what I looked like when I was 14. And I'm chugging along, and I was like, let's stop and get a bite to eat. I think, if I remember correctly, you were like, this is a little weird that we're both going to walk into a Wendy's together.
Oh, I thought it was just kind of funny, because it's like, here we are, the stars of NBC television. We carry NBC on our shoulders, and here we are walking in. There's also a funny height differential to add to the comedy of it. And we did walk into a Wendy's.
We did walk into a Wendy's.
Like common folk.
Oh, yes. And this is the amazing thing. And you know what? I have not been out in public since. That was the last time. I don't know about you, But that was my last taste of the real world. Yeah, I just said, well, there can be no more of this. No, we walked into this Wendy's, and it was funny because they knew who we were, and we just walked in like it was a sketch. It was and then we got our Wendy's and sat down and ate, and we had a lovely time. And
I feel like we weren't, I don't remember being recognized, but maybe you were recognized by a bunch of people. But in any case,
I think I made sure that I was recognized.
Okay.
I usually,
and then,
Sona, isn't that true? When I walk into a restaurant, I say, well, Conan O'Brien, here to eat.
I'm here. TV's Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is that you gave me door-to-door service. You dropped me off at my house.
Yes.
And the cute thing is my mom, who probably hadn't baked anything since, like, I don't know, I was like in high school, had made cookies, which is so cute because she knew Conan was dropping me off, which is so cute.
And she gave me cookies. And I think I came into your house for a little bit.
I think
bit.
You did.
And and I think I probably stayed for a little bit longer than I should have. And I'm guessing like I could just see you and your mom being like, so long drive to Brookline. You better get going. No, that didn't happen. But I remember.
I knew we would be talking about Wendy's. Well, if your memory is like mine, I was like, oh, we're going to go Wendy's first and foremost, first off the bat.
And I'll tell another story that that unites us, which is, I want to say it was, I think it was 2000, way back in the year 2000, which I can't believe it's that long ago, but I'm hosting Saturday Night Live. So you used to write these great sketches about all the Boston characters, like Ben Affleck would be in it, and you do a great Boston accent, and it's all just people with these really thick Boston accents. And you thought, oh, this is a home run. I'm going to write one of these Boston accent pieces for Conan because he's from Boston. And you write it, and I remembered you came up to me just before read-through, which is on Wednesdays. And you're like, oh, Conan, I wrote one of those Boston pieces, so just do the Boston accent. And I do it at rehearsal, and it's a funny it's a funny sketch, and people laugh. My Boston accent, you know, I had moved away, and I don't think I ever had a really strong Boston accent, and I didn't have the ear for it. And I had lived a lot of places since. I remember you came up to me afterwards and went, yeah, well, the Boston accent was kind of off. We could get it better.
No, yes. Oh my God.
No, you weren't being wrong. You weren't being mean.
I'm sorry.
No. Rachel, you weren't being mean, but I was, and so you wrote this sketch. You were right. You've got, you know, it's got to be right. So for the rest of the week, you'd come up to me and go like, all right, now just say this thing where you're like, yeah, I got to go over to talk to Yaz and the Yad. And I go, yeah, you got it. And you'd be like, no, like in Boston. And I'd say, I honestly, I'm sorry, Rachel, I'll do it, I promise. And I never quite got it. And you, I remembered up to the minute we did it, and it aired, up to the minute we did it, I never could quite get it right. And you were horrified, like, who the fuck is this guy? He grew up in Boston.
No.
Yes,
oh
this happened.
Oh my gosh, I apologize.
Don't apologize, you were right.
I know, but like, you're hosting, you're nervous about like a million sketches, and I'm like nattering in your ear about
Were right. It's got to like, be right. And it was
like a dialect coach.
But you know what was so, what was so crazy, Rachel, is that I've seen, my parents have Super 8 films of us from like when we were kids.
Yeah?
And I'll see those, and we all, including me, have full-on Boston accents.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm full-on talking that way, and then something happened. I don't know if it was self-loathing.
You got smart. You
I got
smart
real
is what
smart.
Happened. Yeah.
I got smart at habit. it went away. But I remembered this... I never forget when I've let someone down, like that sticks with
me.
And I swear,
you did not let me down.
I swear to God, I was like, I could see it in your eyes, like this idiot doesn't, he's not getting it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't remember feeling that way, but I,
well, now I encourage people to go out, look for the Conan O'Brien hosting Saturday Night Live in 2000.
No, I remember because we were like outside a parking lot at a convenience store or something like that.
And I remember.
Did Ben Affleck come on too?
Yeah, but he didn't do it at Dress on air, and no one told me. So on air, we're doing it, And all of a sudden, at the end, Ben Affleck runs out and he's like, yeah, Sully, be a friend, and the band kicks in. And I was like, first, I just thought someone from the audience had run out. And I realize it's Ben Affleck.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't even know he was going to be in the sketch. So no, okay. I mean, no one was telling me anything. They were just like, you know, and Lauren.
Well, I apologize.
No, I don't want
for
you
my,
to.
For my stickler. I was being a stickler, I guess. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't remember feeling.
Well,
that, but
listen.
I remembered you were worried about it. So I remember I was trying to like help you.
Oh, so that's how
tips.
You remember
anyway,
it. No.
That's how I remember that you were worried about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And I needed you. And you were trying to help me. No, you were doing the right thing, which is. Like me, I'd be doing the same thing. I take comedy really seriously, and if something is 3 degrees to the right or the left, I'm like, we got to get that fixed. And so it just really stuck out with me.
God. You know what this is? It's water under the bridge. Water under the bridge.
Dirty water.
I hope.
Do you ever, okay. I go back all the time to visit
yes.
my family, and when I go back there, I do have this weird feeling of noticing all the stuff about Boston that really cracks me up, like the fact that I'll walk around and everyone's wearing a Red Sox cap, and when you're in, yeah. like, it's, you're standing up for your team when you're in Cleveland and you're wearing a Boston Red Sox cap, or you're in New York. But when you're on Newbury Street and everyone, including dogs walking up and down the street, have little Red Sox caps on
right.
and you're wearing your Red Sox cap, it's like, we all know. We're all good. It's okay.
I thought everyone did that in every city.
No.
I guess.
It is not like that. It is not like that. It's peculiar to Boston, but God bless them. Mm. God bless them. Wall.
God love you.
Yeah. Do you go back a lot?
I do, yeah, because all my high school friends are there, so I go see them a lot, yeah.
Now, I have to ask you, because both of us, you know, you're Lexington, I'm Brookline, we're both from Massachusetts, and I think, like me, I was interested in comedy, but nobody I knew was in show business. Show business felt like, why even talk about it? It's an impossibility. I was not one of those. I mean, this is pre-TikTok, I'm going to make stuff on the internet and get some likes and some good comments, and then maybe I'll be a celebrity. That seemed completely impossible to me. What was your experience?
Yeah, exactly the same. Like, I liked doing school plays, and I was really into watching SNL when I was little, and I was sort of became like this class clown type. But I never thought of, like, putting that all into, like, I'm going to be an actor. Like, because right. same, like what you said, I had no idea. It was just something, like, for fun, sort of. But I was definitely a comedy fan.
Right. I was huge into comedy. And you could make your friends laugh. Like, to me, comedy was not something that I thought I would ever get paid for. It was something I did for my friends. They knew it. But other people in high school, like, didn't know it.
Yeah. Well, so I had this little group of friends. And they're all really funny. So I wasn't like, I'm the funny one. Because, like, I had a whole bunch of funny pals around. But then I was the one that was, like, doing the school plays. So I think that, I don't know. Then, I would see movies and be like, oh, how do people get into movies? Like, how do they do that? You know? But it was more just for fun, I guess.
I really thought, I remember that there was a time when I was a kid where I thought the way to get into movies was to go where they're making money and walk into the movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, I still feel like that. When I see a set, like, and I don't have a job, and I see, like, oh, they're filming across the street. I'm, like, walking my dog, like, you guys need a extra lady in on this movie? Like, it still crosses my mind.
My sister Kate, and a shout out to my sister Kate, she's hilarious, but she lives in Boston, and I swear to God, for years, she always had a knack for showing up on the local news. So she's just like, if anything happened, she somehow was nearby, and then they'd say, like, we talked to this resident. Oh, man, you should have seen it. It's just crazy what happened. Like,
oh,
Kate again.
Gosh.
How did Kate get into the local news?
Fun.
Yeah, she was on more local news stories, I think,
wow.
than anybody. I was, yeah. She just had that knack. She was always a great witness to something, whether she had seen it or not.
Oh, wow.
But it's funny because you got this, you only look back on it later. Now you have this pedigree, which is incredibly cool because you get out of college, you get involved in Second City, and you're working with, like, Adam McKay and Tina Fey. And when you look back on it now, it looks like you knew exactly what you were doing. Do you know what I mean?
Well, so yeah. So I started doing improv in college, and then we had gone out to, one of the guys in that group was from Chicago, so we'd gone to check it out. So my take was, and I don't know what, you know, what you thought when you were starting up, but I was just like, okay, I'm just going to try this so I don't go through my whole life thinking like, oh, I should have at least given it a shot. You know, so I was like, I'll just try this Chicago thing. It probably won't work. And then I'll move back to Boston and become a therapist. That's because that was my other career interest.
But really?
Yeah, I was really into psychology. I mean, I still am. But so anyway, then I would like, you know, made very, very slow progress in Chicago. Like, you know, I didn't get into Second City classes right away. And then I didn't get like, I, you know, like we all have our little rejections, whatever. But then I just kept going. And yeah, I mean, like right away I met Adam McKay, and yeah, he was one of the first people I met there at Improv Olympic. Then, like, eventually got into Second City with, and like Tina Fey and Scott Adsit, and oh my gosh, a whole
John
like,
Glazer, I think, was in with
John Glazer was in my yeah,
who was a writer performer on my show for years and years, hilarious guy.
And Brian McCann, I used to watch him all the time in this improv. Like, he was in like the group ahead of me, sort of. He was like the house team. So like, you kind of learned through osmosis of watching these guys perform every weekend, you know.
That's a weird thing. It's like, if you want to be a miner, go to where all the mines are and go down into the mines. Like, that's Chicago and L.A. It's probably still that way, but I remember very much in the improv world, because I was interested in the same thing, coming to that same fork in the road and thinking, there's Chicago, Second City, or there's L.A., Groundlings. And I got a job in L.A., so that I made it the Groundlings, but and then later on went back to Chicago and did some stuff there and met a bunch of people. But it's crazy how if you go and you hang out with those people and you find your group, it will happen one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, so many people that we started out with are working. Like, because this is always strike. Whenever people ask me for, you know, college, this college kid's asking for showbiz advice. Like, the thing I always say is that pretty much everyone we start out with, if you stick with it, you know, they're working in writing or acting or something. So it's not as hard as, you know, I mean, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But it's not like impossible, you know, so.
Weren't you in a, you were in a show, you and Tina were in a two-person show together, I think.
Yeah, that was, so after we both had done the main stage for a couple years, then she was at SNL as a writer. And I had left Second City and nothing was kind of happening. So we did a two-person show in Drachen Faye in Chicago. And then we did it here. And it was just, yeah, both of us doing sketch. Yeah.
And it just felt like, oh, we're speaking the same language here. We can.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, we had already performed together at Second City and everything. But then actually after that, like, she got moved to be the anchor on Weekend Update. So, you know, it was good for her to be seen by Lauren, probably, as the performer that she is.
Right.
You know?
And I'm curious about, obviously, you did a lot of iconic stuff. Debbie Downer. I know Sona is a massive, I am too, but Sona.
I love Debbie Downer.
And as a fan, Sona, tell us, what was it that really hit you about Debbie Downer?
How real it is, how everybody has that one friend who's just shitty to be around.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing people come up to me about the most. And they always say that, like, that's my boss, that's my mom, that's my whoever it is. Yeah. But like, there's a Debbie Downer that lives inside of me.
Because, now, is that really like, you? Is that really you?
Well, it's not. But like, what it is I edit out like the thing I want to say. Because, like, you know, I read all these bad news stories all the time. And so if someone says something, like, I want to be like, oh, actually, that's because of climate change. Like, someone's like, oh, it's really nice. Isn't this nice? 70 degrees in December. Like, there's a part of me that's one, that's due to climate change. But I like hold myself back.
And I'm picturing the camera pushing in too.
Exactly.
Which is crucial.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because maybe you can diagnose yourself, but you say this isn't you, but it's a part of you. And you were very interested in psychology. And studying the human mind and behavior. What does this say about you, that this is part of you?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Because it might be a Massachusetts thing. You know, there's a little bit of a Massachusetts thing, like where, you know, we grew up expecting—
Take you down a notch.
Yeah, exactly. We always, whenever someone says, hey, congrats, Conan, on good thing happening to you. I go, well, yeah. Remember, oh, you know, yeah. Let's just chop that down to size. And yeah. Tomorrow I could easily be dead. And they go, well, right, what was that all right, about? Right.
I don't know. I mean, the way that I would write sketches, I don't know what it was like for you, because you were a writer on the show. Mm-hmm. You had to come up with stuff every week. But for me, like, I mean, the actors have to write, too, as you know.
Yep.
But I definitely couldn't just sit at a computer and be like, I'm going to write something funny now. Like, I had to be sort of hit by the muses, which would happen
right
a couple times a year, like for something really good that would last. Like, you know, I could crank out a scene, but it wasn't always going to be like, oh my God, this is going to be great. Like, that was maybe once a year. And it came from like something in life that you would see and then pocket that for a scene. Like, it has to be something I observed
right.
rather than like, I'm going to write a scene about the current political situation. Like, that was not me, so.
Well, I was a writer and not a performer on the show. And what I remember is my best stuff was stuff where I was clowning around because I always performed for the other writers. And I would clown around for the other writers and get them laughing. And one of them would invariably say, that would be a funny sketch. And I'd go, oh, yeah, oh, right. I forgot yeah. we're supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
We'd right. all, you know, a couple of us would sit down and write it out. And sometimes I'd even forget, what was it I was doing again? No. It's really funny when you came in the room and you did that thing. And so
yeah.
some of my favorite sketches were bits that I was doing for people around the conference table at SNL Night Live. And I just, it was making me laugh and it was making the other writers laugh. And then it turned into a sketch.
Right.
So I'm the same way. I couldn't just put some paper in a typewriter and go, and I just really dated myself.
I know, I was going to say.
I'm sorry. there were no, when I was at SNL, not only did we not use typewriters, we wrote stuff out in longhands, and then we took it to this.
For real?
Yeah, that we took it to this literal steno pool of all these different, I remember it was like, five.
It was like a 1950s.
It really was. It was Mad Men. There were five. There were like five women, and you'd hand them the stuff, and they would clack, clack, clack away. And then they would come find you and go, because we were writing in longhand. And we were writing, you know, sometimes upside down, lying on the floor. We'd fallen asleep. And they'd go, I'm sorry, what's this say right here?
Oh,
and I'd
my
say,
gosh.
That's, oh, it's a dilapidated home, or this yeah. is the word, or that's an A, not an E. So, yeah, it was the same way it had been done in 1975 when the show
wow.
started. And I think within probably 2 years of me leaving, it was all computers.
Ah, okay.
But I was the same way. I couldn't just sit down and,
yeah.
well, it's time to write a sketch. Clickety clackety, clickety clackety. I couldn't do that. It had to be something that came out of, I think, my behavior half the time.
Yeah. The worst is when it's writing night and I had no ideas. And then you hear all these gales of laughter coming from other
offices.
Oh
my God, that's the worst.
And you're just sitting there like, oh, it's 3 a.m. I got nothing, you know.
Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst when, and everybody felt it, you know, so many people have just gone on to be a big deal or it doesn't matter. Everybody had that feeling.
Yeah.
I don't care who you were. Chris Rock had the feeling several times of walking past closed doors and hearing laughter inside and thinking, shit, I don't have anything right now.
Right.
And, or David Spade or whoever, name anybody.
Yeah.
Everybody had that feeling. We all did. And it's such right. a lonely feeling because it's 3 a.m. You know that your term paper is due in a couple of hours.
Oh, God.
But, I mean, at least because you're a performer, you knew that even if you didn't write something, someone's going to cast you.
Yeah. You know, someone might cast you, but, you know, you couldn't count on someone to write you this amazing character because that usually came from the actors. And then every so often, you'd get sort of like handed this amazing idea from somebody, or you'd get cast in a regular sketch.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Where'd you come up with the idea for Girl with No Gaydar?
Okay. Yeah. That was from an actual, like I was at a party of a gay friend of mine and there were like 80 men and 5 women there. And I was joking around like, oh, the odds are really good here. You know, going to meet someone tonight. And so like, that's how that sketch came about. Or like there's this one sketch, I mean, it was like not that this is like a classic or anything, but I once wrote this sketch with Emily Spivey where we were playing that game Celebrity, mm-hmm. you know, where you put all the names and like, because I was at an actual celebrity game where one guy was getting really, really mad and it was creating tension. So then I was, oh, this would be a funny sketch. So we did the sketch where, like, I was just getting super pissed, and then I ran through a wall, like, Looney Tunes style. But just that kind of thing, like, something happens in life, and then you're like, oh, this would be a sketch, you know? But like I said, you couldn't control when that was going to happen.
You can't control it, and also it's amazing how other people in the world who don't do it for a living will watch something happen that's pretty mundane. Like, you know, Rachel, you'll be in a Wendy's, and you'll bite into your burger and part of it will fall on the ground, and they'll say to you, Rachel, this is a sketch for SNL.
Totally.
And you're thinking, no, how is that a sketch? A piece of the burger just fell. And they're like, I'm telling you, that's a fucking sketch. And I've always loved that part where I went, really, tell me how that sketch works. The burger falls.
Yes, I was just saying this. Like you're paying in a cash register or something, and they're like, don't put this in a sketch. And I'm like, what? Like, if there was anything here, I'd put it in a sketch.
Right. Your loved one passes away, and you're there, you know, kneeling at the casket, and they're like, don't put this in a sketch. What? You know, this is a sketch. No, it's not. I lost a loved one. They're dead now, and I'm praying over their corpse, and they'll never see them again. Hey, this is gonna be a sketch. I know it is. Where are you right now? We're not in the studio together. You're
I'm in New York.
Okay, tell me about your life.
That's where I live.
Uh-huh. Because I thought I was told that you're one block away, but you just refused to be in the room with me. Yeah, but you're
in LA, right?
I'm in LA right now. Yeah.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
No, I'm in New York, and I have a kid.
How old's your kid?
I have a young kid. He's 11.
He's 11. So is he funny?
Oh yeah, he's very funny. Not that I've been like, okay, we're gonna do. He just is like naturally funny.
Yeah, I don't think you can train people to be.
Yeah.
A kid's funny or they're not. You can't say, all right, get up. Now remember, exactly. Here's double take. Now triple take. You know, now look sad. Now look suddenly happy for no reason. Now fall down. I suppose you could.
Are your kids funny?
Yeah, they are. My kids are really funny and totally unimpressed with anything I'm doing. Like totally.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, in a good way. They're just like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's works for you? Okay. Keep trying, old man.
Right.
So
I haven't done that much like for his age range. So I haven't really had a big moment where I've scored big with him. But yeah, so I'm here in New York and I'm like a mom. And then I do comedy when things come along my way. Or I write something. That goes.
Sure. Yeah. So. But that's funny to say I'm a mom who does comedy.
Well, I guess because when you said, what's my life like, that's my main thing is like school pickup and stuff like that. So, right. I was off doing a movie this summer with Anna Gasteyer, actually. So I was away for a bit doing that.
I bet you had fun, you and Anna.
Oh, yeah. It was so fun. Yeah. It was really fun.
Do you find that you, they're the ones who are funny when it's time to be funny and then kind of quiet and introspective the rest of the time? I do not fall into that category. Would you say that's fair, Sona?
Very fair, yes.
Yeah, I'm trying stuff out all the time.
Yep.
On anybody I meet.
Okay.
I'm just trying to get laughs out there in the world with anybody I come across. Where are you on that spectrum? You're not that way?
No, like I think sometimes people meet me and they're like, you're not funny, but with my friends, I feel like I'm fun. Oh, this is funny. Once someone came up to, I was walking with my son. He was like 7, and someone's like, "What's it like to have a funny mom?" And he's like, "I make her laugh more than she makes me laugh." Like, totally deadpan. But it's true. Like it's totally true.
Right.
No, I'm definitely not like, well, let me try out this bit. I don't know. But then like when I get around,
so you're healthy is what you're saying. What you're describing, Rachel, is a healthy person.
Well, but when I'm around, you know, my friends, like my funny friends, then, you know, we really get going, Conan. No, but, you know, I like with those SNL ladies or my regular friends. I mean, I have friends that aren't actors that are also very funny. So
it used to be in the olden days that there were people that were really funny and most of them didn't go into show business, you know? Most of them were like, they'd go and become a dentist, and then you'd get to know them as, oh, he's that dentist who's really funny, you know?
Yeah,
or he's that, he's that guy that operates the jackhammer at the construction site, and he's, but he's really funny.
Right.
And then I think we're in this era now where if you're a funny person, it's almost incumbent upon you to be making comedic content all the time. You know what I mean? For the internet or whatever, you know? It's like, why aren't you doing this for a living? Well, we do need some dentists. We do need some people repairing the roads. We have plenty of funny people. Kind of,
but I think that's good that you're always thinking of comedy. Because I think I used to be more like, especially on the show, you know, when you're on SNL, you're like, I've got to come up with something. So I was always like eyes out to find funny things. But now that I don't have to think of sketches anymore, I'm not going through life like, this would make a good sketch, you know.
Right.
Like
the, right.
That was my cashier voice of the person that told me to make a good sketch.
I think you blew it because I think this cashier thing is fantastic. I actually think the cashier was
I'm going to write it up.
You're going to write a sketch that just happens to have a cashier in the back. Yeah, just a transaction.
A credit transaction. That's it.
What's it like? I'm curious about this because you've had this experience, and I know some other SNL people have had this experience. I have not, but you were on SNL, and then you leave, and you do these other things, but then you were called back a couple of years ago to play Amy Klobuchar, and I'm thinking, what's it like to go back into that world? I'm fascinated by that.
Well, for me, it was super fun just because, you know, I don't know. I didn't feel like, you know, I'm the big star of SNL ever, you know? Like, some people are, you know, really, it's known that they're, like, the thing. I never really felt like that. So to even get the call to come back, I was really like, oh, okay, like, you know, I don't know. Right now, you're just looking at
I'm looking at you because you made your mark. You made your mark
on
SNL.
I don't know, like, you know how that place is. Like,
You definitely didn't feel like I knew you'd come crawling back. Yeah. You should have had that attitude with Lorne when he called you back to be on SNL.
Oh, Lorne.
I knew you'd be calling me. Yeah, so I was very flattered. I was touched to be called back. You know, I mean, we got called back every so often to do like the Betty White show, and like, so it's really fun to go back there. But they called me to do that Klobuchar, like, you know how it goes, like they call like Thursday night, we've got a sketch, you know, can you come tomorrow kind of thing.
Right.
So it was definitely out of the blue. And then, like, you know, I kept getting to go back the whole year. So it was really fun.
Well, I would think, tell me if I'm right about this, but I think it would be nice when you're there for the first time and you're new, especially Saturday Night Live. And I've always been honest with people that was the most intense environment I've ever been in. For all the different comedy work I've done, it just felt like huge stakes, very competitive. You're deprived of sleep. You really feel like you got to make it or your career is done. I mean, it all felt very do or die when I was at SNL. And I think I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm still friends with a lot of SNL people who say, yep, that's how they felt too. I think it would be nice to go back because you're in a different place now and you can just appreciate, oh, they want me to play Amy Klobuchar. Yeah, I'll come back and my whole life doesn't depend on it. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It's not like, oh my gosh, you know, everything could come crashing down tonight or whatever. I mean, because
you really are a Debbie Downer. You really.
What I mean is, like, well, you know, the pressure for me was trying to write and create stuff, and then like the performing part was always really fun, at least in how I remember it. So when you go back to do something, you're not worried about, is my sketch gonna do well or not in front of the audience. You're just there to perform. So all that's gone, and you're just there for the fun, and the cocaine.
I'm glad we got back to the cocaine.
They plied me with cocaine to do Klobuchar.
That's the only reason any of us go back. So I know you worked with Anna Gasteyer on this Christmas movie.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Okay, so we wrote a movie together. It's a parody of one of those Hallmark Christmas movies, and it's called A Clusterfunk Christmas, and it's coming out December 4th on Comedy Central. And we actually wrote it last year, And then, of course, the pandemic happened. So then we shot it this summer. But the cool thing was we hooked in with this guy, Michael Murray, who's written a whole bunch of these real Hallmark movies.
Oh, great. So you get that authentic feel.
Yeah, like he totally helped us with, you know, okay, in act three, this has to happen, and then this has to happen. And like he gave us sort of this, he was like our Yoda guru, whatever you want to call it, and helped us with the structure. And then we went off and wrote
because this song. A Hallmark Christmas movie is a very specific format. Very specific.
It is. Yes. They almost kiss here, but then they don't touch here and they go on a date here. And like that kind of thing.
They have a fight here.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Perfect for each other, but they
an
keep
emergency. Exactly. Exactly.
They keep finding
an emergency
ways.
Happens here.
Right.
She leaves town and comes back and da-da-da-da-da. So anyway. Yeah. Oh, and then Anna and I play the spinster aunts who own the inn. We're the Clusterfunk sisters. Uh-huh. And we own the Clusterfunk Inn. And this, you know, bitchy executive from the city comes to buy up the inn, but finds the spirit of Christmas instead.
Yes.
Sorry if I ruined the movie. But anyway, that's
be great.
What that is.
I would just love it if she didn't find the spirit of Christmas.
Exactly.
If she's still bitchy at the end. It's just like, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm not Christian. Right. It's not my. This is really not right. What I'm into. I think Christ was a philosopher, but you know, not the Son of God. And I gotta go.
Right.
They never run that way.
Luckily, that doesn't happen. They don't.
Yeah. Was it fun to make?
Oh yeah, it was super fun. We shot up in Vancouver. And
where everything is shot.
Exactly. Well, also that's where all these Christmas movies are shot. So that's kind of why we went there.
And they put fake snow on the ground?
Fake snow, lots of fake snow. Some places where there's no fake snow. And but you know, like accidental Canadian flags and shots and stuff like that. So
lots of a moose in the background eating a big stack of pancakes.
Yeah. A shout out to the fact that it's supposed to be New York but is actually in Canada. We tried to do all that stuff. So
I think 98% of what all of us see on television now was shot in Vancouver. I think, you know, they'll be doing a thing about how there's the Great Wall of China. It'll be a movie about the Great Wall of China being built, and it's shot in Vancouver.
Exactly.
It just doesn't matter.
Yes. We did have to quarantine for 2 weeks and not leave our hotel room, too. I don't know if you had to do any serious quarantining lately, but...
No, I don't. Work, fortunately, when I was doing the show, we were doing it on Zoom, and the podcast... the only person I can really infect right now is Sona.
Oh.
And, you know, we've insured for that. And we have another Sona lined up should anything happen to this.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we found her.
Oh, cool.
She looks a lot like you.
Okay.
Her name's Rona. Rona Rovsesian.
That's so similar to my name.
Yeah, very similar. Okay. And your parents really love her. They think she's fantastic.
She's met my parents?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was part of it. We had
what
to
the hell?
Train her how to be like you. And immediately they were like, she's so much better than the real Sona.
Wow.
Yeah.
That accent.
That's how they talk. Trust me, I've done that. Is your son, you said he's 11?
Yeah.
Is he familiar, like, with your SNL stuff? Does he know it? He
Not
must.
Not really. No, I haven't. Like, I know Amy... Poehler. I don't want to name
Amy
drop.
Amy Poehler makes her children
Poehler,
watch her
very
sketches.
Good friend of mine. No, I know like she's shown her kids a bunch of sketches and stuff. And I don't know why. I just haven't really thought to do that. One time, like a couple years ago, I showed him the Debbie Downer, like the one at Disney World. And he kind of like checked out halfway through. So I didn't really. I should try again now that he's older though. And he can appreciate it.
That's a nice thing when you're showing... your child.
He was probably too young to be truly. That was when he was, you know, into Muppets and stuff. But no, I haven't shown him that. But he takes a little improv class and that kind of thing. He's definitely into comedy.
I'll sometimes see something pop up from SNL that's something that I wrote. They'll like back when they showed reruns all the time of old SNLs from the 90s and. I would watch and I would see a sketch and I go, oh, right, I wrote this, but I don't remember what it was. Let's see. And I would start watching it. And then sometimes it'd be like halfway through and I go, this isn't good. Because I could see it with fresh eyes, you know. I remember people high-fiving me backstage as we were watching it. Like, Conan, it's on and it's getting laughs. and me. So my memory is that all the sketches were amazing, but then enough time went by for me to be able to look at it and go and see it the way people saw it at home while it was airing. And they're like, I could have written better than that.
I know. But also, maybe it was really funny in the 90s. Maybe it was a function of the time.
There was so much that was funny in the 90s. Crippling debt was funny in the 90s. Lapels were funny in the 90s. Shoulder pads. Yeah, there was a lot that was funny in the 90s.
Wait, so was your first job The Simpsons?
No. I started out on a show called Not Necessarily the News, which was a comedy show that was on, it was on HBO back when if you wanted to watch HBO, you had to check into a motel.
Yeah.
You had to have an illicit affair.
Okay.
Anyone who was watching HBO was cheating on their spouse. And then did that, then went to Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
And did that for a couple of years, then went to The Simpsons.
Oh, okay. I flipped The Simpsons in my mind. Okay.
Yeah, well, what'd you do that for?
I don't know.
Didn't you get my list of accomplishments?
I emailed it to you.
Everyone's supposed to know the order that I did things
of
in.
Your successes. I'm sorry.
I don't include Wilson's House of Suede and Leather, where I worked for a while when I came out to LA. Did you ever have any crazy, not crazy, but just embarrassing odd jobs?
Well, two things. One is, I did work in a psychiatric hospital when I was thinking of still doing that.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved to Chicago.
That must be very intense to be in a psychiatric hospital.
It was, but see, I was like in charge of activities. I mean, not for the whole hospital, but I mean, I was just running little activity groups with people.
So
I was probably unqualified, but
yeah.
Just doing like crafts and stuff like that. So,
did you ever feel endangered in any way? Did anyone
I didn't. Okay. I mean, I say so, I don't even remember. Anyways, no, I didn't feel endangered. Sorry. Keep it light, Dratch. I didn't feel endangered. I just don't want to be too boring about it. But,
that you were attacked several times with a blade, but you fended it off. You don't have to tell the truth, just as long as
now
it's entertaining.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Now it's comedy.
Yeah.
Wait, no.
There you go. Now that's a sketch. The guy on lithium attacked me with an X-Acto knife.
Now that's a sketch. one other job I had, an odd job that was only a couple days, was they were opening like a Warner Brothers, whatever it is, Looney Tunes, something like that, like a store in the mall outside Chicago. And I dressed up as a Tweety Bird.
As a promotional,
to bring people into the store.
And did it work? Do you think you enticed people to go in?
Well, I'll tell you, the first day I did it for 2 days. The first day I was Sylvester. That was way too hot. It was way too hot in the Sylvester.
Yeah,
next day I graduated to Tweety Bird, which is a large fiberglass Tweety Bird that like takes up your whole body, right? But then like teenagers would come by and like whap the back of the bird, you know?
Oh, that's so,
like, I didn't fall over or anything, but I was just standing there like a few times. I was like jarred by the sound of a teenager hitting the fiberglass bird.
What kind of person knows that a human being is inside a Tweety Bird costume and goes by and thwacks it? How dehumanizing. What does that say about humanity?
I know. No, but so that was like a weirder job that I had. But I wasn't a good waitress, so I mainly just temped and answered phones.
You weren't a good waitress?
I couldn't stack the plates on my arm. You know how people do that?
Yeah. You know who was a waitress and who waited on me?
Who?
She told me years later, but in the Chestnut Hill Mall, you know, on Route 9, there was a ye olde kind of restaurant where you'd go and people serving you had to wear that little bonnety thing on their head.
Oh, yes, I know what you mean.
That people wore in like the 17 and 1600s.
It wasn't called Pewter Pot, was it?
Yes, it was Pewter Pot.
Oh my God.
And it was a ye olde restaurant.
We had a Pewter Pot in Lexington Center when I was growing up.
Well, guess what?
I thought of that.
I heard this later on when she was performing on my show, playing Andy Richter's sister in this recurring sketch we did.
Poehler?
Amy Poehler said, you know, I waited on you once at Chestnut Hill Mall. And I said, really? And she said, yeah, I was a waitress at the Pewter Pot. And
My God.
So I think she had to come up to me and say, like, prithee, sir, have ye some cocoa?
Oh, my. Okay, so Polar and I actually did work at the same restaurant. We've told this a million times, but we worked at the same ice cream restaurant in Lexington at different times. And we had to wear, speaking of time, you know, time connected headgear, we had to wear like 1920s, like styrofoam barbershop quartet hats at this
You had to wear that one, like a Fuddruckers like kind flouncy, of outfit?
Yes, it was called Chadwick's. And it was like 1920s. They played like, you know, play your piano music. And then you'd walk in. We had like flouncy blouses and barbershop quartet hats. And we worked at the same, but not at the same time, but we both worked there.
I always find it weird that people get like, we've recreated 1915. Come on in and have some, you know, a time when racism was acceptable. Medicine was
now.
Medicine was still in its infancy. Children died at 11. You know, just like, this is, what a wonderful
the
thing to go.
Roaring 20s.
Women can't vote. Have some ice cream. Like, why is this a time we want to go back to? This automobile will probably kill you. Yeah.
Because of that piano music. That's why we wanted to go back. Anyway, I have to bust her out for the pewter pot. I didn't know that.
Yeah. You got to get her for that,
All right.
Yeah. She'll probably deny it now. I'm sure she has a whole PR team that's cleansing her past of the pewter pot, you know, but I'm bringing it back.
Okay.
Rachel, I love talking to you. And I think
you too. Thank
we should
you
celebrate
yes.
by driving together from New York to Boston again sometime. We can chronicle it. We can record the whole thing on a podcast.
Okay.
We can put it online. We'll make hundreds of dollars. We won't stop at a Wendy's this time. We'll get a fast food place on Route 95 or whatever to subsidize the trip. And we'll stop there.
Oh, yeah. Sponsored
and if it's Wendy's, if Wendy's puts up the most money, we'll stop at Wendy's.
Right. If Wendy's is up for the task, sure. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, please. If Wendy's is up to the task. I hear.
We've plugged Wendy's so many times here.
We should get some.
I hope I should get a gift card in the mail.
Yeah. Or at the very least, I want to be the new Wendy's girl. That's what.
Okay. That's a better goal.
All right. I'm looking forward to a clusterfunk Christmas. This sounds really funny. You and Anna Gasteyer doing your take on a Hallmark movie, which sounds really funny. I would check that out. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I hope
do.
So.
I mean,
it's good.
I hope people like it. Yeah.
So many things aren't as good as you hope they are. Rachel, really fun talking to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, let's take a listen to one of our voicemails from one of our listeners. Brett, let's listen.
Hi, Conan. My name is Marie. I'm calling from Saskatchewan, Canada. My question for you, kind of a two-part question, because I heard there was no rules about that, but I haven't listened to all your podcasts, so I'm not sure maybe if you've talked on the subject before, but I was wondering your favorite type of genre for music. As well, my true question is, if you were an instrument, what would you choose to be? Bearing in mind extremities that the person playing you would be using, whether or not it's fingers, toes, their mouth. Anyways. I'm really interested in knowing if you were to choose to be an instrument, what that might be. Enjoy your day.
I love it when someone leaves what's clearly a very erotic and suggestive message and then says, enjoy your day. You know? That's my favorite part.
Yeah, yeah.
If you could be ice cream and someone was licking you, what would it feel like and which part of your body would be the ice cream? Well, anyway, enjoy your day. If you need me, you can reach me at extension 3254.
Oh, man.
Marie, this is quite the message. Well, first of all, I'll start with the genre of music. I would say the genre of music that just grabs me by my nether region and electrifies me has always been hardcore rockabilly music.
Yes.
You know that about me.
I do.
I used to, in college, I discovered the Elvis Sun Session recordings, you know, when he's just getting started out and he's recording That's All Right Mama and Blue Moon in Kentucky and these different Baby Let's Play House. And then that spilled over into all this other rockabilly music that I loved. And it got me interested in combing my hair up so that it looked insane. And I grew out my sideburns and I learned to play the electric guitar. And I love that kind of yodely singing.
Yeah. You're good at it too.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think I have the feeling, I don't know why, but I almost become some Tennessee, you know, rockabilly cat sometimes.
Yeah.
And I really love that stuff. So that's my jam instrument.
That had I had an obvious answer for that one.
Which
for
is?
You or for Conan?
I felt like she was obviously suggesting the cello. I mean, you're in someone's crotch, right?
No, that's...
Isn't that what she said? If you could be an instrument,
yeah,
you would want to be a cello so you could be in someone's crotch.
Well, that's where you went.
Oh.
I think there's also an oral way that you can go. There are instruments that people blow into.
Like a flute.
What'd you clarinet.
Say? What did you say, David?
I said like a flute.
What's wrong with you, you sick... What is wrong with you?
That's gross, David.
We don't need to get into that.
David.
What?
So...
You started it.
I did not.
Yeah, you did.
I did. Yes.
I just, yeah.
The flute.
Everybody was thinking it.
No, the flute you're blowing on the side and you're making these, that's not, I want to de-sex this as much as I can.
Why? That's the best part of this question.
Well, this is what she wanted out of this.
So you're thinking it would be fun to be the cello because you're down in someone's crotch.
Yes.
Oh my God. You're the mother of two.
I don't know.
You're the mother of twins, Sona. You've got to clean up your act now.
You could still be a cello and be someone's mom.
No one's ever said that before. That's one of those sentences I've never heard before.
No, but what are you thinking? Like a sax?
Well, help me out here, David. There's another way to go, which I think she was sort of suggesting. Am I wrong? Was she not suggesting something sexual when she said, remember, toes, parts of your body, your extremities. Extremities, you think, a woodwind instrument, something where mouth is on tube, there's some blowing. That's what she's implying. Am I crazy to think that?
No, that's what she was implying.
Right, which is why my answer is a 1971 Moog synthesizer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the answer that she doesn't expect that is not sexy.
This is one of those times where if Gorley was here, he'd be like, oh, good answer.
Yeah, and if then, Gorley were here and not out having his fez blocked at the local niche hipsteratorium, he would say like, oh, yeah, that right, the 1972 Moog synthesizer, that was the one the Who used on Baba O'Reilly. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
How is that a sexy instrument, though?
You know?
But isn't that...
Remember that cool sound from...
Yeah.
Another one is Won't Get Fooled Again. Apologies to everyone. I don't know what happened there, but that was the beginning of Won't Get Fooled Again. And I know the Moog synthesizer parts by heart. Anyway, shout out to The Who. I hope you guys are well. that's what I'm going
for.
They're listening right now.
I think you, and I'm quite certain that Townsend is listening. And he's a big fan, and so is Daltrey.
I don't
know about that. Well, that's my son impression.
That's a good one. This is my Conan impression. Laugh
my son impression.
Impressions are awful.
It is my impression. Please pay attention to me. I have too many siblings, and nobody paid attention.
I'm Sona.
Neither of these sound like each other.
Sona, I had twin brains and my husband knows karate.
Conan, I can't be more Irish. Literally, I can't even try to be more Irish.
That's actually a very good impression. You nailed me there. Yes, Marie, I gave you your answers. Rockabilly music, and I want to be a 1972 Moog synthesizer.
Right.
That plays the introduction to Won't Get Fooled Again. Mm-hmm. And no, there's nothing sexy there. So I win that one. I just mentioned in my impression that your husband does karate. I swore to you when you had twins,
yeah,
that your husband's karate lessons would come to an end because no new dad with twins has the time to take karate. The other day I call you and you're like, yeah, Tech's not here right now. He's at karate.
Yeah.
How can he still be taking karate?
Well, okay, first of all, your life doesn't end.
It when does. My wife, we had two kids. We had one at a time, and everything stopped. Everything.
You went to work like the next day.
Yeah, but I didn't get to take karate.
Well, no, Tap
it was my dream to take karate, and I couldn't.
You can't do karate.
Why?
I don't know. You don't have it in you. Do you? Can you do karate?
No.
Do you think you can do martial arts for reals?
No. I don't.
But why? I want to hear why you think you
can. I think
can't.
I'm just a tall, foolish fellow.
I was going to say, I don't think you can do it because I think you do bits too much. And then your karate coach.
Right, I would do a
like,
bit about breaking the boards rather than break the board and then my hand would smash.
Yeah. It would be insufferable. They would like tell you to leave.
They would kick me out of that dojo.
Yeah. No, but Tak has a very supportive wife. And he's very lucky, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, wow. I'd like to see the support of Sona someday.
Oh.
I guess I missed the boat. Well, all right.
Wow.
Well, anyway.
Wow.
Worked for you for a long time.
All right.
Time.
Marie, sorry to drag you into our family argument.
Hours.
Yes. Rockabilly music, Moog synthesizer, my unrealized passion, karate.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This episode was produced and edited by me, Brett Morris.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.